You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. At the top of the show, I mentioned the playwright Lynn Nottage. And about a week before the election, my little brother, who is also a playwright, told me I had to go see a play called Sweat. And I told him that I was a little busy. And he corrected me by saying Nottage's new play, Sweat, was about everything our election was about. Jobs, deindustrialization, race, American identity. It's set in a bar in Reading, Pennsylvania, among workers from a local plant. This scene takes place in 2000 and gives us a hint of what's coming.
You saw what happened over at Clemens Technologies. Nobody saw that coming, right? Wake up tomorrow morning and all your jobs be in Mexico, whatever. It's this NAFTA bull.
What the is NAFTA? Sounds like a laxative.
You can probably guess what happens to the plant, to their jobs. But it's what happens to their social fabric that is so compelling. Sweat will move to Broadway in a couple of months. Right now, it's at the Public Theater in New York. And that's where Lynn Nottage and I sat down. I asked her what this show is about.
I think that the play really is about where America is now, where America was 20 years ago, where hopefully America won't be in 20 more years.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you picked Reading, Pennsylvania, which is where this takes place?
I wish there was a better story about why Reading, but I was looking for a city that I really felt was representative of what was happening to deindustrial cities all over America. I had read a newspaper article in the New York Times in 2011 and had said that according to the 2010 census, Reading was the poorest city of its size in America, and I found that very interesting. I found it interesting that it was in the Northeast and that it was so close to Philadelphia and New York. We all have sort of a notion of what poverty looks like.
Yeah.
You know, our assumption is that you're going to go down to the Mississippi Delta and see shacks, or you're going to drive through Detroit and see burned out buildings. But when we arrived in Reading, it looked very much like a mid-sized city with people who were on the sidewalks. And so it wasn't really what we were anticipating. But then around dusk, we were at a gas station. And a car pulls up next to our cars. We're filling up, and the guy's in a convertible, and he turns down his music, and he hops out of the car, and he says, "You guys don't look like you're from around here." And we're like, "No, we're not." He says, "Can I give you a piece of advice?" We're like, "Sure." He's like, "Get out before sundown." And we thought, what is this, the Old West? But what he was saying is that Reading really is a city that transforms after dark, and where, because people are impoverished, the desperation sort of becomes apparent.
How long did you spend there?
Well, we traveled to Reading, and I say we because I went with my assistant, whose name was Travis Ballinger, and a little army of interns. And we probably went on a regular basis for about 2.5 years, trying to just listen and absorb and get a feel for the city.
I want to ask you about the responsibility, if you want to call it that, of an artist in a time when America is wrestling with some big, hard things. How do you take that on?
Well, I think one of my frustrations with the outcome of the election is that we as artists weren't as engaged with the issues as I felt we should be. I felt as though there was a kind of passivity in the way in which we were approaching the world and reflecting back. And so I think that the charges now is to be more alert, to be more engaged, and to be more challenging of the status quo. It's really interesting because we always, when we first began interviewing in Reading, we always said, "Can you describe your city to us?" And they always began by saying, "Reading was." They always spoke in past tense. And that's what made me sit up, is like, wow, we are in a country now that's looking backward and can't imagine itself in present or future tense. And that's what really pushed me to continue my investigation.
I read an interview where you said when people become desperate, they begin to cannibalize the people who are closest to them.
I think that's true.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, I think we know it's true from relationships that we have in our own families, is that the people sometimes who are closest to us are the ones who bear the brunt of our frustration and bear the brunt of sort of any anxiety that we have. And I think it's true when you sort of reach beyond families and into communities, is that when communities are undergoing some sort of economic hardship, a lot of times they burn their own houses down rather than, you know, burning the corporation down.
I mean, I'm thinking about the relationship between two of the women in this play. One is black and one is white.
Yeah.
And you can feel it even before you see it, that – race is going to become this huge fracturing point for them.
I think that that's definitely true. I think that as long as both of them were relatively comfortable, that that conversation about race was not one that they necessarily had on a regular basis. But it is the tension that's lying underneath everything. But the minute that their lives are in jeopardy, they turn on each other, which I think is what it's happening now. I think that it's really convenient in the way in which Trump has fractured this country, in that it's turned the white working class against all of the other working class, when in fact we should be united right now.
This play is in many ways about work, but it's set in a bar most of the time.
Yes.
Why a bar?
Because the bar, at least in that community, is where people retreat after work. It's like after standing on your feet for 10 hours a day before you go home, you need that period of time where you decompress, where you want to sit and you have chats with friends. And someone asked me this question, and I realized why a bar, because Ruin takes place in a bar and Sweat takes place in a bar. And why does it keep popping up in my work? When I was a kid, my mother worked full-time, and after school, I would travel on the subway, go to this pottery class, and then at 5 o'clock, I'd leave this pottery class, which was on West 4th Street, and I'd go to this bar called Jimmy Day's, and I'd wait there for my mother, and then she'd have two gimlets, and then we'd leave. And I thought, I spent a little portion of my childhood sitting on that bench, listening to people at the end of their day sort of chat and commune. And so I think that it's an environment that I'm somewhat comfortable in. And what, at least that bar, Jimmy Day's, it was extremely diverse. And it seemed like one of the few places in New York where you had people from disparate communities coming together.
This play is going to go to Broadway.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It is going to reach a wider audience. Who do you want to come see it?
Well, I want everyone to see it. And I think that we're going to build in opportunities for as large an audience to see it, which means that there will be an offering of some cheaper tickets. But I really feel like it's a show, because of its diversity, that really appeals to a very broad audience.
There are not a ton of high-profile women who command Broadway stages in the way that you now do. How does that sit with you?
Well, it's been a source of major frustration that it's been so hard for women, and in particular women of color, to get access to the huge stage in the center of New York City. And I'm just really excited, one, that I get to bring Sweat, which is about working people, to the stage, but also that I get to share the season with Paula Vogel, who was one of my very first playwriting professors, and who's the one who really sent me on this path of writing. And the fact that the two of us are going to be the only contemporary women that have shows on Broadway this season, I think is just kind of phenomenal. It's phenomenal because, one, it's great that it's happening, but it's phenomenal that it doesn't happen more often.
When I think about the economic model of a lot of theaters, producers want to fill seats. They want something that they know people are going to walk in the door and they're going to go see the revival of Death of a Salesman or View from a Bridge. Great plays, but does that make it harder to bring your kind of work to
and
a big audience?
I definitely think it's harder. I think it's part of it is due to the lack of imagination of a lot of producers. And you see it borne out in Hollywood with all of the sequels. You know, they just don't trust that new material will capture an audience, which is one of the problems. But here's the reality. 75% of the tickets that are bought on Broadway are bought by women. And yet producers still are under this illusion that folks don't want to see women center stage, which is just not the fact. It's kind of a catch-22. They don't know whether it's going to women want to see women because they don't put them on stage. But I know for a fact that with Sweat, with Indecent, which is Paula Vogel's play, that there's a huge audience for it.
So then how do you and Paula Vogel and other people bear that responsibility?
By doing it.
How do you write something that is very specifically about a sort of economic moment in time, but also make it enduring, make it timeless? Or do you care if it's timeless?
That's a really interesting question. It's like, how do you make something that's very much rooted in the moment universal? And I think it's really about investing in the storytelling and ensuring that those characters feel real, they feel genuine. And I sat down to write the play. I wasn't thinking about how can I create something for the future, but really invested in building characters that felt three-dimensional and to build a story that I felt was incredibly compelling. And I think that when you look back at work that resonates over time, it's not necessarily because it's about one moment, but it's because those characters speak beyond the moment, that those characters feel real. And they feel familiar in ways that you can't always identify.
You write about really complicated, hard things. But the last line in this play, and I'm not going to give it away, is really hopeful. Are you?
Well, you know, I'm an eternal optimist. Even when I was traveling throughout Reading, I was always looking for pockets of resilience and pockets of sunshine. I'm someone who gravitates toward the light. And so I like to leave my plays there because I can't remember who said this, but maybe it was Werner Herzog. He said that as artists, we can always imagine a better future. And so that's what I like to end with for each of my plays, is sort of an offering or an invitation to have a conversation about something that's more optimistic.
Lynn Nottage, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can catch Sweat at the Public Theater in New York City through December 18th. The show begins its run on Broadway in March of 2017. And to learn more about it, visit us at marketplace.org.